I'm calling the regular meeting of the Bolton Planning and Zoning Commission for 7:30 p.m. Wednesday, May 14th, 2025 at 7:37 p.m. to order. And let's see. Looks like we only have two of the Republican members here or on the I don't see anybody coming in the waiting room. All right. So I'm going to appoint Diane D'Annunzio for Steve Clark.
No, Jim Cropley is not coming tonight for sure. I do know that, Tom. That's the only person I heard from.
And I'm going to appoint Tom Crockett for Jeremy Flick, and to fill out the roster, I'm going to seat Kwan Gordon. Okay, the next item of business is approval of the minutes of April 9th, 2025.
Make a motion to approve the minutes as written.
I'll second.
Motion Tom Crockett, second Diane D'Annunzio. All in favor say aye.
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 Kwan Gordon, abstain.
Okay, so that's 601. Residents Forum, anyone who wants to speak to the commission on anything that is not on the agenda. Seeing none, we will move past that. Staff reports.
I don't have a lot to report right now because we've been discussing what we're going to discuss later in the regulation section. We do have another upcoming meeting with somebody interested in the drive-in property. And that's another, I think that's next week. So we'll see what happens there. A lot of the rest of what's going on is related to our discussion later.
Anything from Mike?
Yeah, I think I'm going to just echo what Patrice said. Everything that I kind of want to discuss with the commission is better suited for the discussion later in the agenda.
Okay, I see no old business. And new business discussion, possible decision, site plan application for new house, 25 Vernon Road, James Reed, number PL-25-3.
Mr. Chairman, before you begin with the applicant, who I believe is in your audience, and I believe Andrew Bushnell is online, who is the engineer. There, in the packet in front of you is a ledger size of the map. If you need a larger size, I believe Danielle left a larger size in case it's yeah. You want to get better. Okay.
All right, if the site engineer would like to present.
I have this one.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if Jim wants to go first.
Yeah, I'll take the lead if you have any questions.
Okay.
So I'm James Reed. Try to be not so formal, but dear Planning and Zoning Board. My name is James Reed, Jimmy Reed, for those who know me. Last July, my family and I, we purchased a vacant lot on Vernon Road. And we hope to build a very small, reasonably sized cottage. The footprint of the proposed house is only 18 feet wide by 32 feet. two-story, and the footprint of the deck is 8 feet by 32, running along the house north to south. We are excited. We love Connecticut, but I am from Massachusetts. I've lived in the same town all my life, but we do have a place in our heart for Connecticut, which is how I found it. While our lot is undersized, it's approximately a 7,000 square foot lot, which is pretty consistent with lake community lots. Many are actually smaller. It is a legal lot of record that predates zoning. We have already received approvals from EHHD for a septic plan, though we do plan to tie into the sewer line, which is already on the land at the edge of the road. The sewer is already on the property. We just would have to tie in. We were assigned an EDU, I believe it's called, with the sewer authority recently. We already have an approval from Inland Wetlands too, and they were very supportive of the project. We also have an approval from the ZBA for setback variances. We've registered our variance with the town clerk, and we are here today asking for your support on the project.
I have some questions.
Okay.
Jim, are you going to tie into the sewer immediately? Public sewer?
I think I have to.
Actually. I think you have to.
I
just saw the reserve septic area. It's kind of for a loop.
The way it was explained by Thad King, the sanitarian, is that you have to prove feasibility. And not every piece of land, big or small, can support a septic system. My land, based on the way it perked, based on the way that the neighbors' septics and wells are oriented, is compliant and was approved for septic, but we would immediately tie into sewer.
Were you talking a tight tank system, or were you going to have a leach field too if you did septic?
Hypothetically, I believe it's a septic with a leach field. Yeah. Better question for probably Andrew, but.
Oh.
Right. Andrew Bushnell. Professional engineer, Bushnell Associates. So it's a code compliant septic system under the state health code. So there is a primary leach field and a reserve leach field area specified in the plan with 1,000 gallon septic tank for a 2-bedroom house, which he's intending on building.
Couple other questions if nobody else has any.
Sure.
This is going to be year-round use, this house?
Year-round, come and go. Sure, it wouldn't be my primary residence. That's okay. I don't want to mislead you.
But we're not going to think of it just a summer use type of situation.
No, I would say off and on.
Year-round. No, that's fine. That's fine.
Winter's as beautiful as summer to me.
excuse me, I have a question about your well.
Sure.
That is between the house and the lake, the proposed site. I saw 70... It's a very small print. 75 per.
It's bigger over here.
75. Oh, it's over there. Okay. Oh, I see. That goes all the way over to from side to side, really. And the square footage on the house is 800 and...
I'd have to do the math. Again, the house itself is 18 times by 32 is the footprint.
So it's 576 is the footprint.
What are we doing?
That's just, the footprint. I don't know, it's going to be one story, two story, the overall square footage.
It was 800 and something. I saw it somewhere.
That might be the
832 gross square feet of proposed. Am I reading that right? That's what it says, but if it's two stories.
What does it say on there?
832.
Yeah, I imagine that's probably a calculation that includes the deck. I can do the math.
For 256 and 576 would be 832.
That would be it, so yeah.
Because we were talking just last time about that 1,000.
So it would be two-story.
Square foot.
You're talking about 1,000 square foot minimum?
Mm. Yes.
So I don't really, is that still in the regulations, Patrice? I thought that was, and it's funny, I saw something today because Manchester's cleaning up their regulations that was deemed illegal. Requiring a minimum square footage.
It does still sit in the regulations.
I don't know, does it? I know it did in Bolton at one time.
No, it does, but it is not something we can really enforce because there was case law on it that overturned the ability to do that. So the commission, we've had this discussion about that particular regulation. It just had not gotten taken out when we did our last set of amendments. It's actually on for discussion later.
And another question. Anybody have any questions besides me? Talking about the Amosite earlier, are you paving the area? Would that have any difference on runoff?
So the what was approved with the wetlands group is a permeable paver driveway.
Oh, okay.
For permeable pavers, no, there wouldn't be any asphalt or impermeable surface area that I can think of.
Because there's no
curve. The only impervious area is going to be the house roof, everything else.
Yeah.
There's no curb in front of the house, I don't think.
No. I did, mention, with the zoning board that we'd be willing to put a nice landscaped stone wall at the front of the property running from the entrance of the driveway to the north, to the property line, which would look very nice. I offered that. It wasn't in the conditions, but I think that would be great.
I have more questions if nobody else has any.
Yeah, keep going.
Okay. Has notice been given to the abutting neighbors, or do we have to do that? Are we required to do
that? For the zoning board.
We are not required to do it at PZC. But you did have to notify neighbors, I know, for the ZBA.
Okay. And they didn't have any. You would have heard, right, Patrice?
Say it again.
You would have heard if the neighbors were objecting.
I presume so. We didn't hear anything. I assume that a lot of them were, if anybody was interested, they were at the ZBA. They may have been at the Wetlands Commission. I don't know.
I have a question concerning neighbors. I noticed on the hand-drawn map, there was a dotted area where a neighbor had encroached on the property. Has that been settled? Is everybody happy?
Settled and...
I mean, I will say the neighbor's well aware of it.
They do now.
Mark the line.
I'm the type of person, I like to coexist. That's always the first choice.
Right.
If people are fair,
right.
I would say to coexist, but it is my land.
Right.
I think most people who own property probably don't know exactly where the property line is. And typically a neighbor will mow a few feet over in this direction or that direction. I'm not trying to upset anybody. They are aware that they have encroached, but I haven't done anything to the property that, you know, I feel like might upset them in any sort of way. I'm just really, again, trying to coexist, probably. I mean, I could have, but it's not really my style.
Andrew, have you surveyed the property and set pins yet?
We surveyed it and we found some existing pins, and then we marked the line between Jim and the neighbor at 21 Vernon Road with some stakes at one point, just to show the neighbor, you know, where it's at, the line. And coincidentally, that line was established years ago by a boundary line agreement between two of the former owners of the property. So, you know, it's pretty well established line.
Well, is this neighbor, or in fact, both neighbors, are they summer cottages or are they year round homes?
They're year round.
Okay, so I was just wondering if they were aware of it, if they weren't actually living there.
They've been there.
Okay.
All the time that, you know, I come around.
Thank you.
And I've had active dialogue with all of the neighbors. Okay. From start to finish. I've spoken to the neighbor to the south many times, the owner and the tenant that lives there, mm-hmm. As well as the neighbors to the north. And again, then beyond, I mean, that's the first thing I did when I bought the property. I'd come around trying to figure out where some of the markers were to maybe try and help with, you know, Andrew. And we found some of them, and then he was able to, you know, kind of connect the dots. But the first thing I did was knock on the doors to the neighbors' homes to the south and north. And also on another visit in probably September, I left letters in their doors and just let them know that I'd be coming around. And, you know, I did make them aware that we were looking for property markers. And we had, you know, Andrew had kind of marked with some spray paint where they were. So they knew. But, you know, it's they're well informed.
Pretty obvious to them.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not trying to like upset anybody, you know, but, you know, but I've gone in there and, you know, put up a fence or done this or that and, you know, made a fuss about it, probably, but it's not what I did. It's not what I, you know, it's not, again, my style, so.
Go on, you had a question?
Yes, I do. Patrice, is there another document or anything that shows a little bit more detail for the deck? Question I have surrounding that is I'm just wondering the elevation of the deck, if it's going to be above 36 inches from the ground.
There is not, because typically this is just a, you know, he'd have to come in with his building plans and show that. I don't know if Andrew, can you answer that question with regard to the height of the deck?
It will be. It will be.
Okay. So we'll have railings in the plan.
Absolutely.
On the building plan, yeah, I don't have to.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Patrice, can you remind us what section 453.7 says?
Sure. Would you like me to pull it up or just read it?
Oops. Yes, please pull it up.
Okay.
And then read it.
Okay. You're asking a lot, Tom. Okay, so it is the wetland conservation section of the code, and it says no building or structure. Oh, I'm sorry, you wanted me to pull up. Sorry. Do I have a share? Share would be good. Okay, there you go. So right here, 453.7, no building or structure shall be permitted within 50 feet of any lake, pond, swamp, or flood and the people are all in my way. Zone as defined by regulations of the Bolton Inland Wetlands Commission and by the Connecticut General Statutes, except that the Planning and Zoning Commission may permit such building after approval by the Inland Wetlands Commission if it can be shown that the building or structure will not cause pollution or compromise ecology, and such structure shall be built to satisfy minimum requirements of 453.18 of these regulations, which is the special flood hazard area, which he is out of.
Okay, but all right, it's within, so it's within 50 feet.
Right.
Okay, so would anyone like to discuss, I mean, it's already been approved by the Inland Wetlands yes. Commission, but just discuss a little bit why it's not going to cause pollution or other issues.
Can I just put? He submitted, which should be in the packet, the a riparian buffer between the house and the lake, which is supposed to help with any, oops, I'm sorry. That's not what I attempted to do. All right, stop share. I was gonna try and find it for you and then put that up.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Looks good to me.
And I believe that was part of the approved plan with the Wetlands Commission.
Yeah.
Okay, there, yes.
You know, to rehash the Inland Wetlands project, we show the, as you'll see, we show about 15 to 20 feet of in depth of the entire shoreline. On an average, the entire shoreline remaining undisturbed outside the erosion controlled area. It's untouched and with native species plantings throughout that undisturbed shoreline. And I would say, you know, tying into the sewer, obviously not creating a septic system, I think helps a lot in terms of, you know, concerns for the lake itself.
And Alyssa did mention that there were species that would be advantageous to the property, and they talked about that as well, what he should plant. And
I felt like she said that it was a strong improvement to the property.
Yes.
Was the feeling I got just based on what it is now and, you know, what you're turning it into. There's a lot of, you know, standing dead wood on the property. You know, it's, you know, where, you know, where we would do the construction, I would say are some of the more compromised trees and, you know, smaller assortments. So some of the more, some of the larger trees you'll see on the plan that we show as being saved. And I think, you know, keeping the shoreline totally intact was important to me. And important to them. I mean, everything we did on that plan was with the thought process of being respectful to the lake and not being greedy or, you know, detrimental in any sort of way.
I'm not familiar with that area of the lake at all, but are you planning in the future of perhaps putting in a dock? Would that be possible?
You know, maybe down the road. I just, okay. You know, I'm from Mass. And where I live back home, you know, it's we're very respectful. The regulations are very protective and respectful of wetlands, water bodies, and so forth. So I came into this feeling like, what is the least intrusive project that I can propose and get support from?
We're also showing some infiltration units under the deck to collect the roof water runoff to infiltrate that back into the ground.
There's double silt fences
to the lake.
Yes, I had a couple comments. my paper got jammed up because I'm in a rush to get over here. And I checked online on the assessor's card. And for what it's worth, 21 Vernon has a 0.2 acre lot. That's the abutter to the south. Mm-hmm. And to the north, 31 Vernon has a 0.16 acre. So this is 0.15 acres. So it certainly fits in conforming with the neighborhood. I didn't go up the rest of the way because the paper got all jammed up. But, and interesting enough, the house on 21 was built in 1919. So it's been a while. But I, you know, as far as that goes, we're not lowering anybody's property value because we have a smaller slot because we're...
I think it's pretty consistent with that area.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the house size, pretty consistent. Yeah.
Because nobody ever built anything there.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a, yeah.
You found a little gem.
I knew it when I saw it, mm-hmm. you know, and I knew there were risks.
Yeah.
But I feel like a lot of the risks have kind of been alleviated. I mean, I think that the main risk when I bought it was I didn't know for sure if I could, if the property would support a septic system.
Yeah. And so when you found out that.
Of course, yeah. We were approved and we've been assigned an EDU with the SOAR authority. That was, you know, and obviously the zoning board variance. Or the ZBA, I should say. Sorry, back in my town, it's kind of synonymous. But yeah. So I knew there would be challenges. But again, you know, when we developed this plan, Andrew has been phenomenal, but I have spent many hours staring at that plan, many weekends, many Sundays, just in every little detail and decision. You know, my thought process was be reasonable, don't be greedy, be respectful of the body of water, be respectful of neighbors. I mean, I believe the side yard setbacks, I think, are 10 for R3. You can correct me. It could be 20, but I'm pretty sure it's 10. And we've got more than 30 feet of distance between the neighbors on the sides. Mm-hmm. And there's nobody across the street that would have an impacted view either. It's mm-hmm. just a big, steep hill across the street. And, you know, if there were a house across the street that I might be affecting their view, you know, I might do just a one story in that case, but
you have to build it on them. It comes down like that.
It would be strange, but I've seen it all.
Yeah.
It looked like Ferris Bueller's Garage, if you remember the movie.
Yeah.
Remember.
Something in Malibu with their angle.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any more questions, comments?
I'm good.
Okay. We have a proposed motion. I move that the PZC approves the new house proposed by James Reed for 25 Vernon Road in the site plan application number PL-25-3 and finds that it is in compliance with the requirements of section 450-37 Wetland Conservation of the Bolton Zoning Regulations. Would anyone like to make that motion?
I'll make the motion.
Motion Diane D'Annunzio.
I'll second.
Second Tom Crockett. I'll call the roll. Tom Robbins.
Aye.
Mary Lee Manning.
Aye.
Tom Crockett.
Aye.
Diane D'Annunzio.
Aye.
Kwan Gordon.
Aye.
Arlene Fiano.
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. So 700.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
And the best of luck. Enjoy.
Welcome to Bolton.
Something else real quick.
All right.
Okay. Go ahead. You can continue the meeting.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And being a property owner and resident of this town, or is it just in the summer that you're going to use it? That you sit all year long? Right? Yeah. On and off.
On and off.
On and off.
I was going to say that you could join a board.
I told myself I wouldn't say this before. I'm on my town planning board. and it really makes me want to go back to in person.
You're done with Zoom, huh?
A little bit. It feels like that old TV show Hollywood Squares. Right?
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody.
Sure. Love to see it once it's all done.
Really appreciate it.
I'm not familiar at all, is it? Okay, next item, 7, ongoing discussion, Bolton subdivision and zoning regulations. And we had several different things that came up last time, and what have you got?
Well, the first item, I basically wrote down what you guys had discussed. So, and Mike and I have been talking about this. The first item was regarding the minimum floor area requirement, which we just discussed here. There is case law on that does not allow towns to have a minimum floor area, and you would still have to meet other codes, state building code, public health code. So I think what we could do, or the staff's recommendation would be to have a statement, if you need one, that says shall not be anything less than the applicable health and safety requirements. I don't want to reference all the codes because codes change over time, even though I know the building code changes a little slower than others, but I think it would just be enough to state that as long as you're meeting health and safety requirements. And I don't know what the smallest building is. I don't know if Mike, you remember, I want to say it's something like 500 to 800 square feet, but that kind of goes along with some of the other items that you've been discussing, small houses, affordable housing, that sort of thing. So I think the two would go hand in hand, but you do, I believe you have to remove the minimum floor area requirement.
Okay. Is there any more discussion of this, of minimum floor, minimum residential floor area? No. Okay.
All right. Your second item was regarding next steps toward affordable housing. Yep. And there are several things kind of going on now. One is staff is involved at the CROG level with the regional housing plan. In fact, we had a meeting today. And they are looking at some of the things in answer to your questions here. They are talking about perhaps doing, once the report is done, maybe creating some kind of model regulations. And those regulations may be different for smaller towns that run on septic and water versus towns that run on, septic and well versus towns that run on sewer and water. And this has been sort of the way they've been doing this is in small groups. So the towns that I'm grouped with aren't all necessarily over on the east side of the river, but they are towns that are limited in sewer and water availability. So they're really making an effort to sort of look at these things similarly, as opposed to lumping us in with a big city that where everything is sewered and watered. Mike, I think I'll let you take a little bit of this, but you were talking about perhaps doing something maybe toward the end of summer, early fall, with regard to a forum or a presentation, right?
Yeah. So I know the commission has had interest in furthering the discussion surrounding affordable housing with people other than Patrice and myself, no offense taken. And this conversation has come up in other towns that my firm staffs or is involved with, including Coventry. We've had some discussions in Willington, Andover, this is coming up. So one of the things that we're sort of working on is seeing if we can pull together sort of a panel discussion that would involve sort of three components: the sort of civil design side of the house, the construction side of things and the policy discussion. So we're targeting someone who having a sort of a panel that we could invite all these, you know, you as the commission here and in other towns to, that would, our hope is to have a developer that is solely focused on affordable housing. That is his niche. And then a policy person who works sort of from a housing, affordable housing advocacy level and has done work in many communities and takes a really a pro affordable housing stance. So this isn't about, well, you can have a regulation that, you know, looks at this and this is how you include protections, but it really takes a very strong focus on why this is needed and why, no matter what town you are, no matter what you may think the rationale, everybody should be doing, you know, something to push this forward. So we think that, you know, by summertime, we can coordinate and get two or three of those folks together and get a night that will work for everybody so that these questions can be answered by the experts. And, you know, we can get the group in a setting that the issues that Bolton has sort of in mind, which are, you're not directly adjacent to a, you know, large, you know, you're not next to Hartford, you don't have direct access to transit, you're not tapping into water and sewer lines everywhere, you don't necessarily have the same multifamily housing demand that drives the densities that are needed. All these things that are part of this conversation are very similar in some of your neighboring towns, and we think it will be more productive to have more than one community in the room. So we're kind of trying to pull that together so that we can get some of these answers.
Thank you.
One of the other questions in that same area that you wrote down was that you'd like to pursue removing the limit on EDUs for residential. That is something that is solely in the control of the Bolton Lakes WPCA, and you'd have to talk to them about it. When I mentioned this as something the commission was interested, I got a firm that's never going to happen. So I don't know. I know it can't happen maybe now, but maybe there is a way to look at that through the Water Pollution Control Authority's eyes differently. I know, like, for example, there's been some developers who have gone in who have built other projects, so they know what their water and sewer usage is, and they bring in those figures and they basically say, this is what we're using, and that's how they determine, you know, their sewer use and their water use. And, you know, I don't know if we get one of those developers like that who can prove something like that, that might change the mind. But this is something that Bolton Lakes has the sole, the WPCA has the sole responsibility and charge over. I don't know if there's anything you can do outside of going and talking to them, but I don't know if there's anything, you know, that you can do to change their minds. So with regard to that, I don't know what else you're looking for there. I do know that if you're going to build 100 units and each unit's going to cost you $10,000 in EDUs, it's not going to be helpful if you're trying to do something affordable. We did want some clarification. You had something here that said, would like to talk with Connecticut Water regarding the public water supply. What? I'm not really sure what you meant by that.
I think it was at the Bolton Boards 101 the other night. Maybe it was at another meeting, but the first selectman mentioned bringing water up 44.
Oh, okay.
And I know that Connecticut Water has wells in the aquifer. And I was just wondering if there was, you know, is there more development in that? Have there been other developments in that line?
What I know, I don't know what he told you, but what I know, which is public, is that the town of Manchester, who would be providing the water hookup, has been in discussions with Bolton, and I believe Coventry's been part of that too, because it extends beyond that. And they've been discussing things like, you know, do they have enough water? Will they have to reopen the wells that are on the Manchester side of the Manchester Bolton Town line? You know, do they need a pump station or not? And this kind of thing. I think that the town is hoping to at some point get some basically a deal with or agreement with Manchester, and then they would go to try and to the legislators and see if they can get the legislators to help with funding such a project, because it would be a pretty expensive project. But that's where I think they are, and that's what I know about what they're doing. But they are actively pursuing that route with the town of Manchester.
Thank you.
Yep. And the other question that we needed some more clarification on was land leases. What is that meant? I think that was Tom Crockett.
Sent it to me, the chairman.
I know you did. But I sent it Tom Crockett's the expert.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there are some. They were set up a long time ago with the idea that either community or church or whatever would own land, would buy land or buy houses, and they would rent the land. They would own the land, and the people who lived in the house, the dwelling, they would own the dwelling. So if they wanted to paint the house purple, they could paint the house purple. If they wanted to put a second floor on, they could do that. And the whole idea, there's a lot of them in East Hartford. There's about 30 of them in East Hartford. And it's a way to keep the cost down. And the problem is it's really a good deal when they go to sell it, because percentage of the sale of the land goes to the seller, but the land lease stays in effect for 99 years. It's complicated, but if you really want to think outside the box, that's it. And there also was a four family over, I said Jolly Lane, and it was Folly Brook over in Wethersfield, which has since been converted to an apartment complex where they had four family units, and somehow this was before condominiums, really, and they all had an interest in it.
Made it very complicated for.
It's really, really odd, but I've run across a few of them. So just a way to look at things. So if your lot value was like $60,000, say for a duplex, you might charge $5,000 a month, a year rent for it. So they wouldn't have to come up with the $55,000. And then but.
Where are those stock ratings?
They're all over the place. I sent you one.
Yeah.
I sent you one I did a few years ago. Yeah.
I'll have to send it to everybody.
And you're the boss. I figured you would do it. So no, that's okay. But probably less than 1% or 1% of people know anything about it. But
now more do.
No.
But so are you talking about the town purchasing land and then leasing it to somebody to? Okay.
Yeah, they could build on it.
To have the town put it in like the housing authority's hands, right, or something. Yeah. Okay.
I don't know.
Up for that budget then.
I don't know where they do it anywhere else in the country, let alone the world. But
well, that's how the Manchester Country Club is owned. Town owns the land. Country Club is owned, is run by private entity. They have a 99-year lease on the property.
Well, the Cheney family gave it to the town for recreational use only.
Right.
And so it can't be converted to apartments or businesses or anything else. So it's a golf course, and then the golf course gets put out to bid every once in a while. And then.
But that's a land lease. That's the same thing.
Yeah. So it's
what you're talking about.
It's definitely a land lease.
Okay. All right.
So I have a question. Are we going to need to reinstate a housing authority in order to possibly move some things forward?
We have a housing authority set up. It's just they would need to put people into the positions on the housing authority. And I don't know. It depends on what we do. Yeah.
So planning and zoning is aquifer protection. Are they going to make planning and zoning the housing authority as well?
No, they would be a separate commission, separate people.
Okay.
I think we're aquifer protection by statute.
Is it by statute or were you appointed? I'm not sure.
I think it's the default. It's the default position. If you don't create an aquifer protection, planning and zoning ends up with it.
Okay. Shall we go on or?
Yes, please.
Okay, so the next item was discuss the districts and table of uses in zoning regulation. Two family acceptable as of right in R1, but not 3 or 4. Is that the request or is that just a?
That's what we discussed.
Okay, so you're saying allow two family anywhere as of right, as if it were a single family.
Right.
And no extra land, no extra frontage, right?
Right.
Okay, so all right. And then, so what would you do with 3 or 4? Leave it in the zone it's in now, which I think is R2?
Correct.
Okay, all right. And then you wanted to see examples of tables and other town regulations for readability. And that is, when we started this a while ago, we did set up a table of our own that's basically two sides of a page that had all list of all the uses on it, what zones they were allowed in and how they were allowed. Do we remember that?
Yes.
Okay. You want to see how other towns do that? Is that your request?
Correct.
Okay. We can certainly find some examples of that. I wasn't sure if, I don't want to make it too complicated because I think we're trying to make this smaller rather than bigger. I know Mike and I were talking about, I can't remember the town right now. It might've been West Hartford, but they have, a general what's allowed. And then if you click on that retail use, for example, it'll take you to like an appendix that says, and here are all the retail uses that fall under that general category. I don't know if that makes it bigger or smaller or not, but that's, we'll try and find examples to see how to do that better. Okay, so the next item was revisit rear lots. So what would you like to do there? The previous regulations, which it says acceptable to return to previous regulations, the previous regulations were really, it was kind of like if the commission felt like doing it, fine. I think you need to set some standards and just go by that. So anybody looking at it would know what you can do. So I'm not sure what right now. I think you have to have 4 lots and you can have a rear lot in that mix. I assume you're talking about something different then.
Yeah, if you had one lot that was big enough, create a rear lot.
Okay. And so what kind of frontage and what kind of acreage on each lot? Do you have you talked about that or not?
We have not.
Okay. So it runs the gamut. I mean, I would say, and Mike probably knows a little better about this than I do, but you know, it's typically a 50-foot frontage with double the acreage in the back, but it doesn't have to be that. I'm just saying that's a typical zoning regulation for
a
rear.
I think that's the way it was previously, was 50 feet of frontage. I don't recall that it had a double in the back, but.
So, I just was thinking about this. I can't remember the town that it originally came up in. I think it was Old Saybrook. I don't know if they actually pulled the trigger on it, but one of the things that the chairman at the time was very adamant about was that all of the current housing market and construction costs and land sizes had led to what he you know, it's referred to as the death of the starter home. And so one of the things that they were looking at is allowing some flexibility in the creation of lots. So like with this rear lot, but they were tying it to a cap in the size of the house. So statute says we can't say how big a house must be, but you can say how, that a house can't be bigger than a certain square footage. So you could allow, if you wanted to, you know, certain rear lots in certain zones, and you could say size of the house can't exceed 1500 square feet. That would certainly cap the cost of the house, because that would cost the, you know, that would cap the cost to construct. So it's just something that some towns have kicked around so that they don't end up with more $600,000-$800,000 four and five bedroom houses that are 600 feet off the road. Although I guess in Bolton, you're not worried about school age children, so maybe you want to add bedrooms. I could think, Patrice, we can pull a couple of examples. Tallinn has some good regs. I can't remember what we adjusted in Mansfield. And then there's a sort of the opposite end of the spectrum, which I think we could pull from Woodstock, because they actually really want to do everything they can to discourage curb cuts. They want roads to remain as scenic as possible. And in their mind, that means as little driveways as possible. So they encourage as many houses as they, you know, they can to share driveways. So I think we could probably pull both ends of the spectrum and
show. Right. And so that's the other thing you want to think about, is whether you want to allow or require a shared driveway. We do have one shared driveway since I've been here, and that's the four lots that went in over by the school. There was one driveway that went in into the back and served three of the four lots, I believe. And the other lot was in the front of the property. I mean, basically those three lots technically are rear lots because they're behind that front one, but, and served on a common driveway. But, you know, so those would be the kinds of things we would like to set as a standard, just to make it easy, so you'd know what it is. Typically, too, people do like rear lots because they're behind the people in front, and they can, it's usually a bigger lot, so they can build a bigger house. So if you, unless you're doing what Mike said, and including, you know, you can't go over the size of house, you're going to encourage larger home development with a rear lot.
We're talking the restriction on the size of the house, is that's for new rear lots, right? If somebody had a rear lot and did nothing with it and went to sell it, and all of a sudden found out it's 1,500 square feet, would they be grandfathered into the prior zoning regulations? Or would they have to conform to new ones?
That's an interesting question. I was going to say, because subdivision regulations, usually you, when you have a subdivision, if you stick with whatever the yards are, for example, even if the zoning regulations change. But I don't know, Michael, do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, I mean, so that's my reaction is that you developed a lot based upon when the subdivision was approved. If the rear lot was created by virtue of a free split, which established the front lot, then I guess, you know, that would be a question, although I don't know how many of those there would be. But there, I don't know the specifics, but I thought there was a court case or some recent change in the last year related to this that kind of threw into question what protections an undeveloped subdivision lot had. And that, can't remember the specifics, but I think if it came in tomorrow, I would tell someone, figure out what the standards were, the date that lot was born, and that's what you build to.
So I didn't hear quite all that. So they would be grandfathered into the prior regulations?
If it was right. Part of a subdivision. And typically when you do a subdivision, you know, on the front of the map, you've got the table of, you know, here's right. These are the lot lines. These are the yard lines. This is the, so it could be part of that where it would say, you know, maximum house size or whatever.
Do we want to restrict house size for every rear lot?
Depends on what you're trying to do.
I don't know if that makes sense though. I mean, I guess it would depend. I mean, my idea of a starter home is, not necessarily a tiny house in the back of a big house. I don't know. I have to think about this, putting a restriction on the size just in a rear lot. I don't know if that makes sense.
Just a suggestion at this point. So all of these things are suggestions that the commission is going to have to decide, you know, what they want to do. Same thing with the common driveway or how big you want that lot. That's the rear piece.
I think that
Board of Ed would not be excited about it because they're looking for students every year. The high school, graduating high school, quite smaller and smaller. So I would think they'd want McMansions everywhere to get kids. But
in McMansion,
well McMansion people don't always have kids.
That's right.
You know, sometimes it's the smaller houses that
have kids in Bolton High School. That's
because the families can't afford to.
Like 240 kids. There were 240 kids 50 years ago and half the population. Now we got double the population, the same size as students.
Yeah, that's right. And that's why we're looking to affordable housing, because that's where they're studying new families, but they can't afford the big house.
Right.
I think that something else that's worth considering is, you know, in many cases, or in some cases at least, the rear lot will not be, this will not necessarily create a lot behind an existing house. What you may have, and as is the case in Bolton with the way some of the lots are configured, is that the rear lot becomes the parent parcel with the original home, and they break it off so that the new house gets constructed in front of them. So if their lot is, or if their house is a couple hundred feet off the road, which many houses are, then that existing lot may become the rear lot, and they sell it off and they build something up front. But I think, you know, I threw the idea of capping house size out there just because it had come up elsewhere. But, you know, just something to think about is, you know, you're looking at a minimum construction cost of $300 a foot. So a 1500 square foot house, you know, outside of land cost and everything else is going to be $450,000 to $500,000. So, you know, when you look at the average income of families that are starting to have children, they are frequently priced out of all new construction, which is the challenge. The other thing that we talked about with the affordable housing plan and why this all may become important is because there's a bill currently with the legislature now that if it passes, it will transition the affordable housing plans, which are essentially plans that have a lot of good ideas, but no real teeth, no real carrot, no real stick. It will transition those plans to documents that require you to say what you're going to do and then require you to actually demonstrate to OPM that you did the things you said you were going to do. So, you know, one of the things that we discussed with that was that there's also this subset of the population that may be on a fixed income, may have a lot of equity in their houses, but don't have housing stock available in Bolton that they would like to move to as a transition out of the house they raised their families in. And so you want to facilitate that. And that may be smaller ranch style houses. And that would free up the housing stock that the families that you're looking for might buy. So obviously fodder for future discussions and things that we can talk about and really think on for the panel discussion that we're trying to put together. But the hardest thing that this commission is going to probably struggle to move the needle on, just because of the market and everything else, is going to be deed restricted affordable housing that meets the 8-30G standard, because you need a lot of density and you need a market, and that's going to be a challenge here. So the other things which just increase, or said a different way, decrease the overall cost of housing for current or future residents, I think is where you have a better chance at making an impact, even if it's smaller. As I always end up saying, I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
Well, I agree with you.
I should get off my soapbox?
No. I agree that going after 830G is, that's just not appropriate for Bolton. We're not We're not
trying. You never hit it.
We're not trying to keep anybody out. See, the 830G exists when they use the regulations to try to limit affordable housing. Well, we're not trying to do that. We're trying to do the other thing. We're trying to encourage it. But so I think the approach of decreasing the overall cost of housing for everybody is the best approach that we can take.
I think we had two more items, Tom. One was regarding, and again, I think we need a little bit more clarification here. More flexibility in lot shape and size around natural restrictions of water and septic.
Right.
What does that mean?
Well, right now we say you've got to have a 40, an acre, basically an acre lot to build on.
Yeah.
And depending on where you are, that might not be big enough to accommodate well and septic. And then there are some places that you could do it on less. So if you had a, so it would let the developer, the subdivision, shape the lots in such a way that
maximize the use
that they can maximize the use of the land and take advantage of the natural conditions.
So you're talking funky. So it's not the size. The size would be flexible, is what you're basically saying.
Right.
But the shape of the lot would be not square or rectangle. I guess the shape is what's throwing me. I understand the size, because you could basically have a zoning regulation that says you can have a single family house with a well and septic, in a driveway on the smallest lot you can get, as long as you satisfy the public health code.
Right.
And, in the soils in Bolton, you're probably talking about 1/2 to 3/4 of an acre per lot.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep. So, I mean, you could do it that way. I don't know, I don't know if that's going to build any more housing or not. But it's going to create smaller lots, and I'm not really sure what that gains you, unless you're really trying to build your housing stock. If that's what you're,
I don't
necessarily think that's going to be affordable, is where I'm going.
Well, just think of how much a road costs.
Yep.
If you only had to build 100 or 150 feet of road instead of 200 feet of road in front of a house, that would be a dramatic reduction in cost.
Right. And that's a frontage concern more than it is, I guess, an acreage concern. But you could go either way. You could say, our minimum house size is, our minimum house lot is, 100 feet or 150 feet and 1/2 acre. If you can fit a well and septic and a house on there, great. Then you got to talk about what you want to do when you have wetlands on a property. Do you want to exclude the wetlands so that it's the upland requirement, the 1/2 acre is the upland requirement. So if you have wetlands, that's extra. So that you're not running into circumstances where everybody's coming in and trying to build like in the wetland or on the wetland or closer than the.
Well, you'd still have the wetland regulations. I'm not trying to invade that territory.
Right. But they'll get pushed farther. People will push farther if you're talking about smaller lots. But so, yes, you're right. You still will have the wetland regulations.
Something else that you can think about. I've done this once or twice, and I'm not familiar enough with sort of on the ground, you know, Bolton to be able to do this myself. But if there are older existing subdivisions that you think are what you're envisioning, if they're, you know, older, they probably predate the sort of traditional subdivision regs we have now, but those would be plans that we could pull and we could sort of back into what those subdivisions look like. Do they have different lot configurations? Are we looking at lot frontages that are different or lot depths that are different? Or like if there's an area of town comes to mind, we can pull those
Rosedale.
Plans. What is it?
Rosedale, that's right.
So, I mean, we can use that as a starting point.
It wasn't built legally in the sense that they didn't build the roads to the right standards, but the lots sizes that I've, so you just have to, but people like living there. I mean, they've been building, you know, they've been tearing down old houses and building new ones there, so.
So Rosedale was something that predated zoning and subdivision.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what Mike's saying. If you get a look at some of those, and is that what you want? Is that what you're aiming for? Because that's what you could end up with, which is fine. That's if that's what you're trying to.
Yeah. Trying yeah. To... Yes. Yes, but with better roads.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well. Do you want to talk any more about that? We could probably dig up a couple of the older subdivisions that we could take a look. I mean, probably a lot of the lake was done like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing here is reduce exactions for open space. And then you did ask a question, what do we have in our open space fund? I assume that's what this is you're asking.
As I remember the discussion, it was about, we had some goals somewhere for the open
right.
space. And where are we with
oh, where are we with the goals in the POCD yeah. is what you wanted to know. Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. I will tell you that we have no money, I believe, in our open space fund because they used it to purchase the Stanglin property next to the school.
Mm-hmm.
And after they did that, then when the subdivision was done that we talked about earlier on the other side of the school with the common driveway, the open space that was given was in the back of that property that connected to the Stanglin. So it was all connected. You know, we try not to take open space in places where it's just a piece of
yeah.
land for no reason. That makes no sense. So, you know, that's why we have the open space map and the trails map and all of that. And when we do have a subdivision, which has been very rare, you know, we kind of try to look to see if there's any connective areas that would make sense for the applicant doing land as opposed to doing a fee.
Mm-hmm.
But I can certainly look for the goals in the POCD. I think 20% is for some reason what's sticking in my mind. And then where are we is what you want to know, right?
Right.
Okay. There was nothing else on the list, but Mike and I wanted to talk to you about something that basically the case that came before you tonight. We have another application that's coming for a property that would be within the 50 feet regulation like Mr. Reed tonight. The difference mm-hmm. is the property that's going to be developed has an existing foundation on it. There is no, the foundation's already there. It's been there for some time. So they're just putting a house, building a house on top of the foundation. And I don't know what the commission's feeling is on whether that would have to come to you for site plan like this did tonight, but he's not changing the location of the foundation.
Is this also on the lake?
Yeah.
It is.
Is it also on Vernon Road?
It's on Vernon Road.
I guess just as an initial opinion, if they weren't building decks or anything beyond that, that would get it closer to the lake than it is, I would think that you could rebuild on the existing foundation.
Okay, so the line in the sand is if you're doing anything closer to the lake than the existing foundation,
or more impervious area, or any of those.
How long has the foundation been there?
Any outbuildings?
Yeah, new outbuildings,
docks. I remember listening to hours and hours of conversation about docks. I don't know exactly why they're so important, but I know they're important to a lot of people.
So I have a question, because one of the staff reviews a while ago with regard to the regulation was to get rid of this particular regulation in the zoning regs, because it seems somewhat redundant. In Mr. Reed's case, he has, you know, gone through the ZBA and the Wetlands Commission, but the Wetlands Commission really has the say about wetlands issues. And I'm just wondering what would happen is if the Wetlands Commission had approved giving him a permit, but the Land and Zoning Commission didn't. So can you justify that regulation in the Planning and Zoning Commission's hands for me?
Which regulation?
I think we've talked about this
for something within 50 feet, even though he has a wetland permit already.
I think we've talked about this before, and I think we want to see it.
You want to see what?
We want to, if somebody's going to do, you know, if they're going to be closer than 50 feet to the lake or whatever the wetlands or whatever it says, we want to see it.
So what happens if you say no, though, and Wetlands has said yes? And why, I don't know under what circumstance that would be, but I mean, doesn't the Wetlands Commission have sort of more authority there than you do? They're the ones that are regulating what goes on upstream of a wetland, in and around a wetland. They're the ones that have the, you know, the wetland review area.
It was back to the wetlands.
Well, sometimes they just end up sending an agency, you know, commission send back people back to the other commissions for clarification. I mean, that's happened before. Zoning board could send it back with the questions that the zoning board had. I mean, it's not a pleasant thought, but
I'm semi playing devil's advocate here, but I really don't understand the redundancy and why PZC gets involved in this if the Wetlands Commission is the one with the authority over the area. You know, under normal circumstances, this would have gone through a subdivision and you would have seen it at that point. But because it's around the lake, there really is not a lot of subdivision property. There's not a lot of property to be subdivided anyway. So, but it's not just, it's any body of water.
So Patrice, I have a question. If I'm not sure where the lot we just approved is, that I think is up closer to Quarry Road, right?
I'm not sure either, Arlene.
Okay.
It's got to be farther down if there's a cliff across the street. Like from, at that
point, they're level,
so it's got to be.
You can't even climb up that cliff.
So you think it's closer to 44?
Got to be closer to 44.
The one that has the existing foundation, does that get grandfathered in? I mean, if he doesn't meet certain criteria and the foundation is too much impervious area on this lot, isn't that foundation already grandfathered in though? How do you, if there's an existing foundation, how do we tell them they can't build it?
Why I asked, how old is the foundation?
Mike, you got
50s. I think you can't. I think that they have a vested right. and protected right to put that house back where it was. And I think generally, I'm trying to remember, and I'm not clicking fast enough to find it, but there is case law on the idea of zoning regulations regulating and trying to address the location of structures in and around wetlands and watercourses. I think it's out of Brantford. And basically what the case says is, if you're looking at it purely from a flood control standpoint, you can do it. If you're looking at it for anything else, you can't. That is what the Wetlands Commission is for. And this came up in Mansfield. They had this contingent of folks that really strongly wanted the town to establish riparian corridor zoning. And what we ultimately agreed to is the Wetlands Commission basically decided and agreed that if anything like a primary structure was to be proposed within 50 feet of a wetland or water course, they would always deem it a significant activity. And that meant they would hold a public hearing and they would evaluate if there were feasible and prudent alternatives. So once the Wetlands Commission made that adjustment, then we didn't need to have anything in the zoning regulations for it. So I think if the commission wants to leave it in, you just have to know that your scope has to be very narrowly focused in only looking at the flood control of whatever body of water is adjacent to the structure.
Right. So when you guys were asking questions about, you know, is he going to use it seasonally or not, it's really kind of irrelevant.
Right.
You so, really can't. There's no judgment there. And just so you know, I've shared the screen. This is the lot right here that you, this is Mr. the guy who came before you tonight.
Okay.
This is on Vernon Road. So here's Boston Turnpike down here. This is the, what do you call it?
Lake House.
Lake House. Yep. Right. And so across the street from this, there's these big parcels that aren't developed, but they're more than 50 feet away. So everything else, I mean, if you look at it at all, there's houses on a lot of the lots. So, but that's the location right there.
Okay. So if you're talking about this house with the existing foundation, if he has too much impervious percentage on the lot, the only thing we can ask them to do is manage their stormwater, right? Find ways to make sure that there's not a lot of runoff into the lake and different things like that, right?
Right. And you know, making sure that they're not putting making permanent improvements to areas that would be deemed necessary for flood storage. So if they were along a river, you wouldn't want them putting, you know, their shed or their deck or their house or other improvements or adding grading to the area that is where that river is supposed to flood during events. The other thing that you might look at in that case is, you know, but again, the Wetlands Commission had already handled it by the time it got to you in this property, is establishing some type of a riparian buffer. And that's to, you know, again, prevent erosion, but also help clean, treat, and cool the water before it makes its way into the lake. So, yeah, it's that's sort of the scope.
Okay.
I have a question. The lot you're talking about there with the foundation, it also has a slab on it. So how much water is being added by putting a roof over it?
Zero. If it's a slab, it's going to be a no change, no increase.
Right. So there's no run. There's no other runoff.
The only difference would be, I guess, if they are adding gutters or something, they could potentially be channelizing the water that comes off that roof into a downspout versus sheet flow that's going to come off a slab. But I mean, nobody puts in houses now that doesn't have some type of drainage. I mean, you can't bring a downspout to daylight now anyways, and that would never, and they're going to all, it's going to have to go to wetlands. They're going to look at all that, you know, because they're within 50 feet.
What type of foundation okay. is there now? Is it a full concrete type of foundation?
Yes.
I believe it's a slab there, but I'm not sure, Quan.
Okay. So the only question I would have, considering how long has this foundation been present? I mean, just with, you know, erosion. And the other question I was wondering about, if there's like any pyrotite in the slab, which may need repairs, and how that may affect the structure being erected on top of it.
Yeah, that would all be building code. They would have to prove that the foundation is able to be built on first before they do anything else. I believe they've done that, but I'm not exactly sure.
Okay,
we're approaching 9 o'clock, and I think the only thing, it sounds like we're ready to write text on is the elimination of the minimum floor area.
Okay.
But that's a place to start.
Okay. And we'll get you some examples of some of the other stuff we discussed and for next time.
Thank you.
All right.
Motion to adjourn.
There is no correspondence, so there you go.
I just wanted to reference the question that I presented to the chair regarding new septic systems that I've become aware of and whether or not there is any feasibility or common usage around this area of those types of systems.
I will send them over to you.
Okay. All right. Probably better to send them to Thad. I mean, he's going to be able to.
Yes, I was going to send them. Yeah.
All right.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
A second.
Second, Diane D'Annunzio. All in favor say aye.
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 And the meeting is closed at 8:59 p.m.
Thank you. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you. And that was